Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And this is Jesse.
And tonight we're going to talk about the HBO miniseries 2019's Chernobyl. Written and created by Craig Mazin. I think it's Mazin.
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're the other one that has something to look at.
Right off the bat. Well, no, I can read it. It's like Raisin, except with a Z and missing an I and with an M instead of an R.
So it's just like Raisin.
Exactly. It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By the way, do you know what Craig Mazin has done before?
No.
He wrote Scary Movie 3 and 4, the superhero movie, The Hangovers Parts 2 and 3, and he's writing the 2019 Charlie's Angels reboot that's in post-production.
That's a wide swath of diversity.
Actually, it all sounds really terrible.
It does, except for this. This is amazing.
Have you seen the trailer for Charlie's Angels?
No.
Who's in it?
Kristen Stewart. Elizabeth Banks. I think she's Bosley.
Elizabeth Banks plays Bosley?
I think so.
That kind of defeats the purpose of Bosley. It's Charlie. Who plays Charlie?
That's just a voice, right?
Louis C.K. maybe? Yeah, it's just a voice. Yeah. Okay.
So it looks good.
Let's see. The reboot. Naomi Scott, Elizabeth Banks, Kirsten Stewart.
Kristen.
Jimon Hounsou is Bosley. No. So this is a double bill. I call shenanigans. Patrick Stewart.
Oh, okay. Stewart's Bosley?
But there's two people listed as Bosley, and one of them is not Patrick Stewart. One of them is a very dapper-looking black gentleman.
Jimon Hounsou.
So Jimon Hounsou, is that his name?
I believe it's Jimon.
Jimon. I don't know. What's he from? I don't know.
Serious.
Yes.
Yeah. He was in Amistad. He was in Constantine. He was in Gladiator. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know who he is now.
We've got a Guardians of the Galaxy alum in this miniseries. But we'll get to it. So, okay. A couple things to get out of the way with talking about this. This could potentially be like a 6-hour conversation, but we're probably not going to talk for 6 hours about it just because of who we are, because we're going to yada yada all the important parts. So, nuclear reactor, go boom, bad things happen, everybody dies of cancer. Okay.
I've got some housekeeping.
Yeah, exactly. Can we just Kubo the whole 5-part miniseries of the best thing I have seen in 2019 so far? Okay. So, one thing to get out of the way is this is not a documentary. In the words of the creator of the showrunner, whatever you call it on the miniseries, this is a dramatic retelling of history.
Sure.
There's been some composite characters. There's been some compression of timeline. But a lot of the scientific details are, they took a lot of pains to get them right. And Drew's going to be our fact checker on that. So this all started when he decided to write something to address the question of how we're struggling with the global war on truth. So another reason is because he always knew that there was a problem at Chernobyl and that it blew up. He just didn't know why. And that kind of intrigued him, why he wouldn't know that.
So, Eric, you listened to the after show, you said?
I did.
Did they discuss the timeline of when information was disclosed?
They didn't get real far into it, except that a lot of the information really does come from his memoirs that he recorded on audio. that were published after his death of suicide 2 years to the day it after fits. The explosion.
So you're talking about Legasov?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering when that information made it over to the West.
Don't know.
Because I, as part of my schooling, I studied Chernobyl a little bit, not to a great extent. And some of the information in the show, which makes total sense, is not what we thought, you know, back 22 years ago.
So the graphite tips weren't discussed at all?
No, they were.
Okay.
Other details of the reactor. Like, I think it's no, the RBMK is no longer classified as a breeder reactor. It was thought to have been a breeder reactor back in the day.
So educate us. RBMK, what is the...
And what's the difference between a breeder reactor and a... What's the opposite of a breeder reactor or the...
Like a water-cooled, like a light water-cooled reactor.
Okay.
So a normal, an ordinary reactor that you would think of uses enriched uranium as fuel. And that fuel gets spent. You use it. You create fission using that fuel. And once the fission happens and the decay happens, that fuel is now spent. It's waste. You have to dispose of it and use new fuel. It's still very efficient. But breeder reactors create, as a byproduct of the fission, they create more fissionable material. So in theory, you can breed your own fuel just based on the reaction.
So it's somewhat self-sustaining?
It is.
But is that where we turn uranium into plutonium, or is that...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And plutonium is the bomb stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why it kind of fell out of favor when nuclear proliferation started to wane. But also, you didn't have to use enriched uranium. So the theory behind it was, if uranium was a scarce resource, you know, you would take natural uranium-238, and if you needed to enrich it to uranium-235, I think uranium-235 is like it's either 0.3 or 0.03% of naturally occurring uranium. So if you imagine you have a big pile of uranium and you have to enrich just 0.03% of it is what you would use for nuclear fuel. So there's all that uranium-238 that goes to waste. But a breeder reactor could use just uranium-238 and other materials to create a chain reaction, a sustainable chain reaction.
That's just what you described sounds terrifying.
Well, we already know that when you said, oh, if you just have a pile of uranium laying around, isn't a pile of uranium laying around a problem in and of itself?
If there's a lot of it.
Okay.
So back when I was studying it was thought that the RBMK was a breeder reactor. And the really scary part was the Soviets designed it in a way that you could refuel the reactor while it was still operational.
That is
bonkers.
Okay. So the theory was that that's what happened? They were trying to refuel it while it was running?
No. I'm pulling deep from 20 years of memory, so I'm sure I got it wrong. But the theory was, as described in the fifth episode really well, they were doing this safety test to see if they could use the residual energy of the turbines to trigger the emergency generators in the case of a shutdown. And in doing so, that created really dangerous conditions that were not understood by the operators. That, along with the poor design of the control rods, caused voids to be created in the core, which heated up the reactor core, which heated up the water, which is supposed to cool and moderate the reactions, and turn to steam, which heated up more and created more void space. So it was this chain reaction of things you don't want to happen, and it eventually vaporized all the water so quickly that it exploded.
And the way they sort of described it in the podcast was that this was sort of it took like a cascade of things to go. I mean, this never happens. It never should have happened,
right?
Because even though there was this flaw, they had the only way this flaw would be a problem is if they did some crazy stuff, including running this crazy test, which they were only running this test to check it off of their checklist of things they had to do. They didn't care how the test went, right? I mean, isn't the idea that that Dyatlov had, or I'm spelling his name wrong probably.
Dyatlov,
yeah. That Dyatlov just wanted to get this done, and as long as he had some measurable results, no matter what they really were, he could send them off to Moscow, and he's already taken care of this thing, and he'll be promoted eventually, and he'll go about his life. But the fact that this wasn't, they weren't aware what was going to happen. And in fact, the thing that was supposed to save them was what actually caused the whole thing to blow up. Which is why in the first episode, we see that everybody, I mean, this the whole thing starts with the basically the explosion and the people in the control room who are like, we did everything right. I mean, Nobody did anything wrong. So
that was Akimov's mantra over and over again. We did nothing wrong.
Which, exactly.
By the book, technically, I guess up to that point, technically they did nothing wrong except that they executed a test at a substandard power level that they should never have attempted the test at. And they knew that.
Yeah, but somebody screwed up that part of it, right?
Yeah. I read a safety analysis on it, and one of the things they identified was the test was originally supposed to happen during the day, during the day shift, and something happened to delay the test, so they rescheduled the test for the night shift, but there wasn't an adequate changeover. There wasn't adequate communication about all the settings that they changed to get the reactor ready for this test.
Yeah, so basically this thing blew up. And they have no idea why. But let's back up just a little bit to set a little bit of the groundwork. First of all, I really thank you guys for like pushing me to watch this, because the idea of jumping into a series is a little bit daunting sometimes.
Well, it was hilarious because Drew had mentioned it, I think, and he'd seen like one episode.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, so then boyfriend Jesse and roommate Derek and I watched it at home, and we burned through it. No pun intended.
You leapt ahead of Drew.
Yeah, because it was. First of all, it was hard not to watch all of them. Although it was tough. Some of the episodes were a little rougher, but it was pretty amazing. And it was because the story wasn't. It involved the people as much as anything, but it was really the character development made you care even about the people you didn't like, because you wanted to find out what had happened as much as everybody else did.
Fundamentally, it's a sort of a mystery.
Yeah, it was crafted, I think, really, really smartly, because like you said, it really focuses in on the characters at first, and doesn't really explain what happened, all the science and the forensics of it until much later. At that point, you're already emotionally invested.
And they didn't translate the Russian that was Russian.
Another little bit of groundwork I was going to lay here is that they did two things that I thought were brilliant. One was they didn't decide to go
Russian
accent. Boris and Natasha to do the Russian accents. They said everybody can use their whatever accent they have, usually English, like British, but not American. Because that's the thing, an American accent would take American audiences away. It would take them out of the plot. But English, if everybody's speaking in a British accent, it works out fine because it just melts away.
Sure.
But anytime a character is speaking, they're speaking in English. But anytime you're hearing a recording, you're hearing it in Russian. And a lot of times, like the very first thing where it talks about, where you actually hear like the equivalent of the 911 call to the fire department, that's all real transcript, but it's real recordings of real stuff.
But the evacuation recording that they played, they never translated.
Yeah, exactly.
You never hear any of that.
There's also poem, right?
Right.
That they do. That's, yes. Yeah.
Well, and the Chernobyl song.
Before we get too far, I'm just really curious about establishing a baseline. Like Jesse, do you remember anything about the actual circumstances of Chernobyl? I mean, before you watched the series, how much about this accident did you know?
Nothing. I knew nothing going into the show. So it was all pretty surprising.
Awesome. Did you know there was like an exclusion zone in Ukraine and Belarus?
Yeah, a little bit, but not to any extent of detail.
Mostly probably through video games.
Yeah, exactly, this is going to make the Chernobyl Diaries a much better horror movie.
Yeah, what year did this happen?
86.
86?
Yeah, so it happened like 3 months after the Challenger blew up.
Yeah, so I was 9, 10. I vaguely remember it on the news.
April 26, 1986.
Yeah, so I was 9. Yeah, yeah, I vaguely remember it on the news, not much. But yeah, so it's always been just part of the background of the Soviet Union.
I remember watching the news obsessively because I was super, for the longest time, I was super confused about what meltdown actually meant. And I remember as a much a younger child asking engineer dad about like, well, explain meltdown. And he's like, well, meltdown means it just goes, you know, the whole thing goes into the earth. It just melts down. And I was like, all the way? He's like, yeah. And so I was convinced through my entire lifetime that it was like anytime there was a meltdown, it was going right to the core of the planet.
Well, when, I mean, the movie The China Syndrome is all based on that, right? Is that if there was a meltdown, it could theoretically burn all the way down to China. But what really they are worried about, well, I guess we'll get into the science and the geology of it. But the other thing I wanted to mention way up front is
What do you remember?
I just remember we knew something happened, but we didn't know exactly what or to what extent, because we all got information, you know, 4 or 5 days later and from Scandinavia, because the Russians weren't saying anything about anything. So, you know, there were people speculating, but this was still like full on Cold War, Soviet Union, like, you know, and Mikhail Gorbachev was in power. So we already know from other sources that this was like a tenuous time in his presidency. And actually his quote, they say at the end of the whole thing, is that it was really Chernobyl that took down the Soviet Union, because it cost them a ton of money they didn't expect to spend to fix the problem.
And a ton of people.
Yeah, and it kind of illuminated. Well, the thing is, they have people to spare. Yeah, it also illuminated like all the worst parts, all the worst suspicions of the Soviet system.
They had people to spare, kind of, but I mean, not people. I mean, could you do that if that happened in America? Could you do that? Could we mobilize a force?
Well, see, that's the kind of the point is that of this story that they're telling here is that this was it wasn't a uniquely Russian problem. This could have happened in America. But the solution was a uniquely Russian solution, because were like, there are things that were on the table for them, like the idea of human robots, that would not be on the table for us, partly because it's a cultural thing. I mean, you know, I think we'd all like to think we'd be brave and whatnot. But if somebody says you need to go and do something that will cause you certain death for the good of America, there wouldn't be as many volunteers as in Russia, where it's a lot more, the state is part of your life, and B, you're not really volunteering as much as being voluntold. But yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have the patriotism required to send
750,000 people into fields to turn over soil.
Yeah. Yeah. Although we did a good job washing birds and rocks, right? We put manpower on problems that could have been solved with a match.
Yeah.
Exxon Valdez. Yeah.
Greenpeace appreciates you.
Well,
thank you for your contribution.
Hey, a lot of my friends made a lot of money washing rocks, let me tell you.
Oh, I have friends who were directly impacted and got settlements from Exxon. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're probably still dealing with the fish issues, but that's a whole different program. Anyway, the other thing I was going to mention, and Jason mentioned this in some housekeeping from a week or two ago, that the score of this, they actually went, Hildur Gunnarsdottir went to a decommissioned power plant in Lithuania, where a lot of this show was filmed, and they recorded ambient sounds they had a couple of different specialists, sound engineers and recording specialists. And then they took samples from those ambient sounds and created this really spooky score.
It's another character. It is a horror elementy character of this entire series, and it's amazingly well done. but it gives you this just impending sense of doom and dread and horror.
Oh, yeah. It's great. This was very skillfully done. But shall we dive into the plot?
Sure.
Going into it? Anything else anybody wants to say? Jump in, Jesse. It's
No.
You're going to have to fight. No. You have to elbow your way in, just so you know. You already know.
I would say that growing up in the Cold War in Alaska and having a nuclear catastrophe occur and not knowing the origin of what it was pretty terrifying at the time. And then as the news slowly trickled out, then it was we weren't sure what was going to happen long term to us because we aren't all that far from Russia.
Well, and also, you know, there are environmental disasters that our government hasn't told us about. You know, Aaron Brockovich, right, for one example. It's not the government as much as PG&E or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, sorry. Other movies.
We still haven't done Aaron Brockovich, by the way.
We should.
It's on the list.
Okay. So,
oh, man.
Of five episodes, episode one, which his title is 1:23:45, which was the time of day that this explosion took place. And we start out, it's the second anniversary of the Chernobyl disaster, and Valery Legasov. I've heard all these names even today, but I'm still going to have problems because
that's
what I do. Exactly. So Legasov, played by Jared Harris, who we know from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Fringe, and Mad Men. He is the chief commissioner investigating the Chernobyl disaster, and he is recording tapes and blaming engineer Anatoly Dyatlov, played by Paul Ritter, who we know from Quantum of Solace and Hannibal Rising, as well as other superiors for the incident. And he hides these tapes, and then he kills himself. So there's going to be some yada-yadaing in this, because this is all pretty skillfully, dramatically done.
And I think the producer or the filmmaker, one of them makes the point that we wanted to tell you up front that he killed himself so that you knew what kind of story you were in for, that you didn't feel slighted or bait and switch at the end, like, and he killed himself. Like, no, we wanted you to know up front that this is how dire he felt at the end of it. And then that kind of gives gravity to his entire storyline.
It also puts a ticking clock on the whole thing, much like a pregnancy does in a different episode. And then we go back 2 years earlier to Pripyat, which is a city next to the Chernobyl power plant, which has been described as like a pretty good place to live.
It was a science center because of the power plant. And so they have built dorms and an entire kind of neighborhood, if you will, little village of shops and schools and industry just to be able to service and school the children and workers of the power plant, which was still expanding at that point.
Yeah, well, the power plant must have been a pretty prestigious place because they didn't have like food lines and stuff. It was a city you wanted to live in if you had to live in a city in Soviet Russia.
Well, it had power for one, and there were four reactors, so there was plenty of work.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out that after the explosion in Reactor 4 in Chernobyl, the other three reactors still kept producing power until the 90s,
mm-hmm.
which is bananas.
Well, like they could not, though. They didn't have enough power for their well,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just people just had to live there and deal.
So it's 2 years earlier. It's the night of the explosion. And firefighter Vasily Ignatenko. And his pregnant wife. Although he doesn't know she's pregnant.
Well, except you know she's pregnant from the beginning because she's puking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she's puking in the bathroom.
There's only one reason they ever show a woman throwing up.
Yeah, similar to there's only one reason anybody coughs and there's blood on the handkerchief.
Yes.
That person's going to die.
It's not a tumor.
Yeah, her name is Ludmila. And they witnessed Reactor 4 of Chernobyl power plant exploding. And then we go to the control room, which, by the way, the control room, the set they used was amazingly accurate.
Yes.
I mean, they did a lot of work to make everything look exactly right.
I think we mentioned this before, but they kept the Russian alphabet on all the controls.
Mm-hmm. Which actually turns out, like at the end, when we see the trial, you have all those cards that he uses
that are in Russian.
And they also used the Russian alphabet there too. So they're like, oh yeah, we can print up these cards and we don't care what they say. Because we're going to be, it doesn't matter.
Did it drive you crazy, Drew, that you couldn't read anything?
No, that was fine. The only thing that took me out of it was the AZ5
yes.
button.
It just said
it looks like A3.
Yeah, exactly. Is that Cyrillic?
I assume.
Okay, because I was like bait and switch there. It's a 3, damn it.
This whole trial's a sham.
Exactly. Well, it turns out. So then we go back to the control room and we have Dyatlov, who is a prick. And that seems to be borne out by all accounts in Russia. That guy is a jerk. He is demeaning to his subordinates. Yeah. So yep. Is Z 3? Is
yeah. that? It has to be.
It's in the Russian
alphabet. Yes.
In the Russian alphabet, that's the Z.
Damn it. I was going to ask you about that. Like, how does that even work?
Well, it explodes a reactor, apparently. That's how it works.
Ironically, it's the thing that was supposed to save them. Anyway. Okay. Sorry. Spoilers.
We would call that the scram button.
Yeah. Now, does scram, is that an acronym? Or does scram mean you get the fuck out of the place?
I think it's an acronym.
I think so, too. Oh. Is the word scram based on the acronym?
I cannot imagine.
Could the verb scram? Yeah, I can't imagine either. So we have this conversation within the reactor control room because they think from the explosion, they were like, whoa, we don't exactly know what happened, what led up to this at this point. We just know that there's an explosion and they're getting reports saying that the core blew up. And Dyatlov's like, no. That could not happen. That did not happen because that doesn't happen in these kind of reactors. It's just impossible.
Sort of institutionalized arrogance.
Yes. Plus, it's the worst case scenario, right? I mean, and so he keeps giving people orders to do stuff that are sort of futile. Like everything he's telling is them to do. Including sending his like two guys that we hear a lot from later down to like manually turn all these valves to let water into the reactor for no good reason anyway. Cause like the more water you just put in there, you just turn it into steam, right?
Cause there is no core.
Exactly. So it's just,
he wants to keep water in the core. There is no core.
Exactly.
But he will not even concede that as a premise.
No, it cannot happen.
Right.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia, which, you know, scram was coined by Enrico Fermi, and he said it was the safety control rod Axeman, which
okay, nope. I was with him right up to the left.
which later was morphed into safety control rod's activation mechanism.
That sounds more right.
So they basically had the word scram, and they just...
Well,
fitted the words to me to match what sounded cooler than
Well, I don't think you want Axeman in a printed in a nuclear.
Does it play guitar?
I mean, you, brother Drew, experienced a nuclear reactor at college, right?
Yes.
So, did you actually have a scram button? Did it say scram on it?
Yeah, the big red like flat safety button that you see is right in the middle of the control panel.
Unmistakable.
It's part of the startup checklist is to make sure it actually works.
Yeah, you probably don't want to have to hunt for it, right? Open up a manual.
So before you ever start the reactor, you test it.
Yeah,
that seems like a good. That's a good safety measure.
Is the scram button shoves all the control rods into the reactor, thereby stopping the reaction, right?
Right. Yeah. So if you imagine the reactor, it's a matrix of a bunch of different rods in a geometric pattern. And you have fuel rods in a certain pattern, and they're all surrounded by control rods. The control rods absorb all the neutrons. So they absorb the neutrons. Neutrons can't hit the fuel rods, can't cause fission. So when you want to power up the reactor, you're essentially raising the control rods out of the core to let more reactions take place. And if you need to dial it back, you lower them, and that's how you actually control the power generated from the reactor core. So if something goes wrong, you hit the scram button and all the rods drop, Sorry for hitting the mic. All the rods drop, and all the reactions get absorbed into the control rods. No more power.
Obviously, if all the control rods are down, that is a situation where it's not going to work. I mean, it's safe because it's not producing what you want to produce, right?
Right.
But there would never be a situation where most of the, or all but six of the control rods should be up, right? I mean, that should not happen either. That was part of the problem here, is that they were getting these weird readings of low power. And so they decided just to pull up everything but like six or eight control rods out of 230 something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not a good idea either.
Yeah. The power had gone so low, they were trying to jump start it to get it up to a high enough power that they could conduct the test. So they needed a minimum power to be able to let the turbines keep spinning once they shut it down.
Jumpstart seems like a bad term in relation to a nuclear reactor.
That's what they're trying to do, though.
No, I understand. But how long was your? I mean, you had a teeny tiny baby reactor at college. But how long was your startup procedure? How long would it take you to get it producing power?
Like by the time I got good at it, probably 45 minutes.
And most of that is just checklist time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 2 megawatts.
How many megawatts did Chernobyl 4 produce?
Thousands, I think.
Like 3,000 or something?
Are you talking about its capacity rated, or what it was actually? I mean, because...
Think it was like what? It, like something like in 1,500? Yeah, think less than 2,000.
It was the RBMK 1,000. So maybe that was a 1,000 megawatt.
Ah, there we go. Well, I can't tell the difference between a 1,000 and a 3,000 and a 5,000 because it's...
The nuclear power plant consisted of an RBMK 1,000... four of them, each reactor capable of producing 1,000 megawatts of electric power, 3,200 megawatts of thermal power. So I don't know what the difference is.
That's that steam turbine thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Electric power creates heat. Heat drives the turbine.
Gotcha. So 3,200 megawatts of thermal power, 1,000 megawatts of electric power.
So one of the reasons that I started Chernobyl many, many weeks ago and then didn't continue is because I found this first episode to be so anxiety inducing, mostly from the fact that it was really obvious that nobody around the reactor, including a lot of the people that worked there, had any...
Like the entire fire brigade?
Yeah, had any concept of radiation, what ionizing radiation can do.
Because they came to put out a nuclear reactor fission fire with water.
Well, they came to put out a roof fire.
Yeah, so just knowing that all these people are reacting to this disaster of a situation without any knowledge is just so terrifying.
Yeah, which means they had no protection.
Right. I mean, just that firefighter picking up that part of the reactor core, that piece of graphite.
Yes.
Oh. I couldn't watch after that. Had to take some time.
No, there were two episodes that I had to say, okay, I'm done for the night, because I have to think on this a little bit. And if it gets more like this, it's going to be a rough night sleeping. So
I think we actually got the parents. We watched the first episode, and then did we watch the other four in sequence, like two and two?
That sounds right. Yeah,
which was. It was hard. And even though I'd seen it twice before, pretty much by that point.
It's some dramatic stuff. There's a lot of tension. And it's not just tension from the music, although that really ramps it up, but also because this isn't a movie about, and if Wayne, if you're listening, the lesson of Chernobyl, per Mazin, is that this isn't a the lesson isn't that modern nuclear power is dangerous. The lesson is that it's the lying, arrogance, and suppression of criticism. Those things are dangerous. Because, so if your boss says, do these things because this has happened, and you're saying, there's some evidence this other thing has happened, and he says, no, that other thing can't happen, you idiot, do what I say. Especially if your whole life is based around following authority figures, they looked at each other and they said, what are we going to do? I mean, they are not capable of taking a different path.
No, and he threatened them and told them if you know, they didn't follow his instruction that they would never work in a reactor again.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which didn't matter because they were all going to be dead anyway.
Well, and even like when he sent the guy to go take a peek at the reactor, like to look over the roof and look into the reactor, the internal struggle of that character was, well, if it's what he says, then that's information we need to know. But what if it's what we are fearing, then we're all dead anyway. I mean, one of the reasons why they couldn't think about this being like as bad as it was is because, oh yeah, that just means they're all going to die sooner or later of something awful. Meanwhile, we have the firefighters and we get to see the beautiful blue light, which actually seems to be fairly accurate. Is that the same blue glow that you would see in your reactor in the... Is that a different thing?
I don't think so.
No, I think they described that was actually ionizing radiation into the atmosphere is what you saw. Okay. That was the glow.
Okay, yeah. So that's just coincidental that it's a blue thing?
I just think it was light in general.
Was it blue? I don't know.
Yeah, it was. Apparently it's blue and it's like a light shining up into heaven and it was really pretty.
Yeah, no, the blue glow you're thinking of is, I'm going to butcher it, Cherenkov radiation. And that's actually caused by... having energy so high that molecules are moving faster than the speed of light, which is possible because in a vacuum, nothing can move faster than the speed of light. But in a different medium like water, molecules can. And since they're moving faster than the speed of light, it's a shift in the spectrum that you're seeing.
How did I didn't know that things could move faster than the speed of light in a different medium. Huh. That's interesting.
I hope I didn't just make all that up.
Ah, it's okay. It, you know what? If you're listening, physicists, let us know at science@notacreepyway.com. Okay. So then we have everybody. The plant is falling apart. We've got these firefighters that are going to their doom, which we know, but they don't know. Although the pregnant lady is getting some bad vibes off of the whole thing. However, the rest of her cohort of friends, they're going to what is later called the Bridge of Death to get a better view of the fire because it's so pretty and amazing. Which, by the way, if this were just like a forest fire, I could kind of see, you know, a prurient interest in going and taking a look if you're not going to get in the way of firefighters. But if they knew this were some sort of nuclear event, you probably should not go as close as you can to the fire.
Yeah, when that ash started falling, it just made my whole stomach clench up.
Yeah, yeah, that's bad stuff.
That was fallout, right?
Yeah. So now they're just breathing in that radioactive dust. Exactly. It's going to cook them from the inside out.
And eating it. Because they're eating food.
On the bridge. Question here. Because we're going to get into talk about acute radiation syndrome, and none of us are doctors, so we're going to lean heavily on Drew. In my research, because I read a book, I'm not a doctor, but I read a book, you know, they were saying that...
By the way, that's still one of my all-time favorite jokes in the entire history of the podcast.
which joke?
Your joke. I'm not an expert, but I read a book.
Okay, so the radiation, acute radiation syndrome. So you are exposed to radiation. If you have radioactive material still on you, right? Like if you pick up the graphite thing and you've got it on your hand, you've got it on your clothing, all this stuff, then you can therefore pass on that irradiation to other people because of actually direct exposure to radioactive material, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you get hosed off, are you then, are you still potentially a danger to other people? Like, my understanding is you're like, because when we get to later episodes where we're talking the hospital where you weren't supposed to get your pregnant wife next to you because you're dealing with radiation sickness, you're not still glowing, right? I mean, you can't give her the radiation.
Yeah, you are.
Can you? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if they ingested so much of that
isotope,
that ash and debris that is still in them,
mm-hmm.
they are radioactive.
Okay.
And if it's...
So they're like emitting different particles and waves and stuff.
Down to a cellular level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they all had to be buried in lead coffins and then buried in concrete.
See, misinformation from the Russians will lead you to believe that.
Yeah, I mean, if you get something on your body,
yeah,
that's radioactive, and you wash it off, great.
Okay, that's the Silkwood shower, right? That
right.
prevents, that way you don't take it home with you.
Exactly.
But if you ingest it by breathing or eating or whatever,
mm-hmm.
we don't judge your lifestyle.
Right.
Okay. All right, that's good to know.
You have those Pripyat sprinkles on your donut.
Yeah, and there are a few different types of radiation. There's alpha, beta, and gamma are the three main ones. Alpha and beta radiation are generally not strong enough to make it through, you know, much of anything. But gamma rays,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
Gamma rays can make it through a lot. That's why you need lead shielding to protect you from gamma radiation. So even if you have, you know, a little bit of material, if it just sits on you, you know, it's continuing to irradiate you. And maybe, depending on what it is, if it's just maybe an alpha contaminant, you know, it may not penetrate many layers of your skin, so you just get a burn. But if it's really strong gamma radiation, then it'll just cook you all the way through.
And the beauty of this, we're going to skip around a little bit. The beauty of this is if you get like a high dose of radiation, apparently it starts out, the first symptoms are like actual burns, like it will be like a burn on your skin or whatever, and then you may like be vomiting and you have some other stuff, but then there's like a period where you seem to get better, like your symptoms kind of go away, because
you reach a latency period of about 2 to 3 days where it appears to you like suddenly, oh, I'm all through this bad, you know, this bad icky nasty stuff where my hair is falling out and I can't, you know, keep from throwing up all the time.
Yeah, because as that cellular mutation is going on, it's going to take a little bit before it ramps up to the level where it's liquefying your organs and whatnot.
Well, you're basically decomposing from the inside out.
Yeah. So, but it's a nice little grenade. It's kind of like the burn victims where you can get super badly burned in a fire, but get rescued and being taken to a burn center, but you may already be dead. You just haven't actually done the deed yet. You know, you might never recover from it because you're going to be so septic or whatnot. Anyway, happy times. So
remember Charlie. Sorry, remember Charlie is a sort of famous safety video, and it's a testimonial from a guy who got burned up at a gas oil or gas processing plant in an explosion. He lived through it, but he describes in great detail the agony he had to go through getting all of his skin, like, essentially cheese grated off every couple days.
Yeah.
So that's the safety mantra after you watch that training videos.
Oh.
Remember, so Charlie, don't do something stupid.
Similar to, like, Highways of Blood.
Yeah.
Driver training videos that Jesse's not experienced yet, but we'll find them for you. So,
just a little light watching.
Yes. So, then we meet some of the other characters in this. We have the plant director, Brukhanov, and we have the chief engineer, Fomin.
Fomin and Brukhanov.
Yeah, and Fomin is played by Adrian Rollins, who's actually Harry Potter's dad, James.
Hmm.
Yeah. And those guys, I mean, they're almost sort of like Keystone Cop type figures. I mean, it's a little bit... If the consequences weren't so dire, I mean, they're both kind of falling all over themselves to blame each other and other people and figuring out how they can still report good news up the chain.
They are toxic bureaucrats.
Yes.
And I believe that at some point, if you do some research on Fomin, his nuclear engineering degree was a correspondence course.
Yes, yes, yes. Uh-huh. Well, I think what was it... Dyatlov, or was it Brukhanov, who was actually like a different kind of engineer or worked at some sort of, what was that? There was a quote, like you worked in some sort of shoe factory or something.
Oh, no, that was one of the party men. That was the Kiev.
Okay.
The Belarus, wherever the Minsk, it was Minsk.
That was, okay. That was the that dude was the bureaucrat. That lady went to go see to tell
Dr. Komiuk.
Tell him to distribute the iodine tablets.
Yeah. That was just a party bureaucrat.
So at this point, We have Dyatlov. He has concluded this is a hydrogen explosion that caused leakage of contaminated vessel water. And then we have the Pripyat Executive Committee, who they meet to figure out how they're going to deal with this.
In a bunker.
We have this great speech by like the old man of the group. And even though one of the people there says, no, there's graphite on the ground. The only way graphite can get on the ground is if the core exploded. I'm like, no.
Can't happen.
How is that even possible?
Exactly. So as all the way up the chain, all the way up to Mikhail Gorbachev, who we meet later, as long as they say, like, look, you're the expert, right? And if you tell me that this didn't happen, then I'm okay. You've told me. There we go. It didn't happen. Everybody do what I'm going to tell you now based on the information you've been giving me. I'm using the best information I can, and I'm doing what I can from it.
It's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Exactly. I could not do anything else because this makes complete sense based on what you've now told me. So
the fact that they were in an underground bunker, though.
Well, you know, when the first explosion happened, one of the reactions is this, well, could this have been like a bombing?
Sure.
Yeah, that was everybody's first reaction. Was it the Americans?
Yeah, because things don't blow up, right? So,
well, yeah. They're not supposed to.
Yeah.
That's not generally built into the design of a nuclear reactor, I would think.
Thus ends episode number one. And it's tense. I mean, it doesn't leave you with a happy... Actually, none of these episodes really leave you with a happy... The final episode gives you a conclusion, but that's a manufactured conclusion, as it turns out. Anyway,
yeah, so... And you've watched this more than once all the way through?
Yeah, twice now.
I went back, and actually, it was my wife's suggestion. We went back and watched the first episode after watching the conclusion of the fifth. And that is actually extraordinarily rewarding, because especially doing it back to back, because the fifth is where they explain all the science and mechanics of what actually happened. And then to go back and watch everything they're doing, it really, yeah, sorry, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. It really, really adds to the effect and the tension in that first episode. Well,
and that's why it was so effective, because, you know, the writer knew where it was, this was going to end, but you don't get the scientific explanation till the end, because by that time, I think Jason's already said, you're already invested in the characters. You know, you already care about how this turns out, even though theoretically you can just go to Wikipedia. I had to like stop myself from like going online during the thing and saying, is this really what this happened, or is this how this whole thing works?
Yeah, there were a couple of things in episode one which were just extraordinarily chilling to witness. The dude who held the door open.
Yeah.
And then almost immediately started bleeding from the burns he got just by touching that metal. That was difficult to watch.
And everybody who knew, I mean, basically, Dyatlov was the only one there on site that just didn't assume, oh, yeah, they're dead.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He never accepted the premise otherwise, no, ever.
Until his death, like right. 10 years later, he still said, I didn't do anything wrong. I don't know what you guys are all worried about. He also, I guess he had been exposed. He had been in another situation a couple of years before where they had a radiation exposure. And he took a near lethal dose of radiation. He's like, yeah, it was fine. No big deal. Besides, the reading was only, what,
3.6 Rontgens.
Yeah, per hour or whatever.
Not great. Not terrible.
Yeah, not terrible. Exactly. I love that as the mantra, because and it turns out...
It's repeated. Yeah. I mean, that's the party line.
They're hammering at home because, yeah, 3.6, what is it called again?
Rontgens.
Rontgens, okay.
Either is correct, so...
Yeah, again, it's not great, but it's okay. Well... Turns out that's because that's the maximum of that device they were using, their dosimeter or whatever it's called.
Couldn't read any higher than that.
Exactly.
I think now they measure more in microsieverts, don't they?
A Rontgen is equivalent to a rad, which is a measure of energy. Please send me an email if I screw this up.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
A
dose is the quantification of the effect of that energy. So you'll hear doses in units of rem, which stands for Roentgen equivalent man, or millirem. And I believe so that's like a Western unit, but the SI equivalent unit of that is sieverts.
Is SI System International?
Yes.
Ah, metric man.
I think. Are you looking this up to verify?
I'm trying to see, because there is a Roentgen to microsievert translator.
Yeah, but it's not a straight
conversion,
right?
Right.
Because, I think they're trying to convert from an energy to a dose. Yeah. I want to say a Roentgen is the equivalent of a becquerel, which is the SI unit for, and that one becquerel equals one disintegration per second. Sorry, I don't even remember.
Isn't becquerel right. One of the mother sauces?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I have to contribute. Sorry.
You start with a roux and you add some nutmeg and
Oh, yes. You know.
So 100 rem is one sievert. 5 sieverts will kill you.
Yeah, I want to say you're supposed to be limited to a lifetime dose of something like 5 rem. And if you are responding to a hazardous situation involving radiation, you will be limited to units of millirem per shift.
And so when you work at a facility where you have to wear those little tags, which are basically that, I think somebody explained it as, at least maybe back in the day, those are just basically a piece of film.
Mm-hmm. And like an X-ray.
Yeah. So you just kind of measured how much of the film was exposed, and that way you know.
Yeah. But you can actually dose out of a career. Hmm. Like you, if you get a dose, you may no longer work around radiation.
So there must be an agency that records all these things. So you can't just say, I've had no doses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
OSHA and NRC.
Ah.
Okay.
So that makes sense.
We're going to talk about the NRC later, right?
Are
we?
Maybe. So, sorry, we got to accelerate this. an hour into it, and we're on episode 2 called Please Remain Calm.
You sure you don't want a chair?
I'll be fine.
Or a pillow. Or So, okay. Now, the episode 2 starts 7 hours after the explosion. By the way, this whole thing, it was intentional that the first episode takes place over a matter of like 8 hours, and the second episode takes place over the matter of like a couple of days or whatever, and the third episode takes weeks, and the fourth episode takes months, and by the fifth episode, we've years from the, up to 2 years after. So.
It accelerates.
Yeah.
Much like a nuclear reaction.
I guess.
So Stellan Skarsgård was not even in the first episode?
No.
That's
7 hours after the explosion. He actually, since he grew up in Sweden, he'd had the direct effect of the radiation from Chernobyl.
But how awesome was he?
Oh, he's great.
He's great.
Yeah. Not like his brother Bill or Alexander.
His son.
Son. I get this is a dwarf situation that we encounter periodically.
No, they're actually related.
Okay.
You're bound to be right once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So 7 hours after the explosion, Ulena Komyuk, played by Emily Watson from Red Dragon, she detects a spike in radiation levels in Minsk. By the way, I thought one of the more brilliant pieces of this particular movie or series was that I like the way they explained at the end that she is a composite character. Her character in this story is representing all of the scientists who worked to
expose this.
Yeah. To solve the problem or whatever, to investigate. And it's interesting because, I mean, this is just a storytelling trick that you do, but I love the way that they actually just gave it all to you at the end saying, oh yeah, she's not a real person, but the people that she represents did a heroic amount of work. We just can't, we can't.
For brevity and storytelling, we had to
because there are hundreds of scientists who
there would be too many characters and it would be like 1,000 hours long.
Yeah, plus it would just get too complicated.
Start to look like Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah. Well, by the way, half these people were in Game of Thrones too. Game of Thrones and Harry Potter, a lot of characters, actors from those movies. Again, English accents. They work well. So she detects a spike in radiation levels, which this is all true as far as in Minsk. They thought they just like had a tiny little radiation leak in the building because they worked with low levels of radiation or radioactive equipment or something. And yet, no, it turns out it's outside radiation. And hey, it looks like this is the same kind of radiation you get from an RBMK reactor. And the nearest one of those is this place. And they're not having any problems over in, like, I can't remember the name of the other city that was closer. But, well, Chernobyl's, no, there's one closer.
There was a closer reactor because they checked in with it. Yeah. And they're like,
oh.
Yeah. And then they called Chernobyl and nobody answered the phone.
Yeah.
Well, that couldn't be right.
Well, and she makes the observation, like, the reading that high that we were getting, if it was Chernobyl, that would have to be open.
Yeah. And that doesn't happen, right?
Right. It doesn't happen.
Yeah. It was RBMK reactors. They don't blow up. So she sets out for Chernobyl. And we go to the hospital in Chernobyl. And Ludmila finds that Vasily and the other ARS patients, acute radiation syndrome, have been evacuated to Moscow.
Well, the really severe cases have been evacuated to Moscow.
So in Moscow.
Oh, that was the scene where the dude from the Bridge of Death was saying, take my baby.
Right. Right. Yes. Yep.
God,
oh, yeah.
Damn it.
Horrible. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the wouldn't have helped. Baby was toast.
Baby toast is not a happy thing.
Yeah. It's like Welsh rarebit, really.
It did look like they had kind of a Wellington-esque appearance of their skin toward the end. Anyway, so at the hospital, we see all these this horrible situation. And but back in Moscow, Legasov explains to Mikhail Gorbachev, played by David Densick from Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, 2011 and 2009.
And they got his little birthmark and I said, perfect. Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, no, it was like a Lee Press-On wine mark tattoo, right?
It's like a Cracker Jack temporary tattoo.
Yes.
Lick and stick.
He tries to explain that the situation is way more serious than reported. And he is then sent back to Chernobyl with a skeptical Boris Sherbina, played by Stellan Skarsgård, who we know from Good Will Hunting, Dune 2020, by the way, as Baron Harkonnen,
Yay.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, 2011, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Insomnia, and The Hunt for Red October.
And Ronin.
Which we have not talked about, but turns out is available streaming. I'm watching a lot of streaming movies lately on different streaming sources, and it's... There's a lot of crap mixed with some hidden gems. I guess that's the joy of finding the hidden gem is because you got to wade through so much crap.
That sounds like a Netflix ad right there.
So then we have...
It's just Video City in a different format.
Except that, I don't know, the selections are really...
Except that you don't have to rewind anything and you don't get late fees.
True.
And you're not limited to how many you can rent.
No, but they got you though.
Yeah,
you had to actually go to spend money at Video City. These people got you from cradle to the grave, baby.
And then one of your best friends doesn't leave movies that you loaned her in her car for like 3 months.
Have you seen the movie Sphere?
Yes.
Long
the
time
TV
ago.
Movie?
Oh, no. I saw the actual movie.
Wasn't
theatrical
it a TV movie?
No.
I saw it in the theater. It was like an almost 3-hour real movie?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Is that a Michael Crichton movie?
Yeah.
Yes, it
was.
Was that Sharon Stone? Sharon Stone, Dustin Hoffman,
yes.
Samuel L. Jackson?
Yes. It's awful.
That's when anything written by Michael Crichton was getting greenlit. Yes.
That must have been because they spent a lot of money on that movie and it was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes. That came after Jurassic Park and after ER, right?
Yeah. It was a big steaming pile of shit.
But it was so expensive. It was a beautiful pile of shit.
Money does not equal quality.
It was a polished turd. The acting was good, but yeah, the story was ridiculous.
The Abyss.
The Abyss was great. I remember it being, at least the technology in The Abyss was amazing.
When was the last time you watched The Abyss?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I love The Abyss. Michael Biehn cutting himself into the table. Very tense.
Breathing water, breathing fluid. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so From a helicopter, we've got Sherbina and Legasov.
What was Sherbina's job?
He was the director of energy, I think. Minister of energy. And...
That poor bastard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. And so there was a little artistic license because, A, he was not going to throw the guy off out of the helicopter. But it would made for attention. But we have...
Sherbina in a lesser show would have been like a cartoonish villain.
Yes.
But as played by Stellan Skarsgård, he was a really interesting character.
Oh, yeah. Turns out to be kind of a hero.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, this is a real character. So he really did do the things that he did here. Except for threatening to throw the guy out of the helicopter. It was probably a little far-fetched. Anyway... So they see the blue glow from ionizing radiation, which means the core is exposed, and we got the graphite debris, and then Sherbina comes, and Sherbina is a force to be reckoned with. Like, he goes down to the clowns of Brukhanov and Fomin, and is, like, just telling them, oh, yeah, this is... He's, knock it off.
Yeah, even though he's not all that knowledgeable about nuclear reactors, he's got a great bullshit detector.
Yes. Oh, and I love the fact that he learns quickly from Legasov, like, how it works, and then throws it right back at the other guys who are like, oh, you know, never mind, we can't bullshit you.
Yep.
So Sherbina was, from 73 to 84, the Minister of Constructions for Oil and Gas Industry. From 84 to 89, he was the Deputy Chairman of the USSR Council of Ministers.
Ah, so he's upper-level politician.
Yes.
And by the way, you don't get to be an upper-level politician unless you have connections and you know how to play the game. So all along, he has to play the game.
Well, you have to be a yes man. Or you have to be a no man while saying yes.
Well, yeah. When we talk about Vienna, we're going to talk about the fact that you just can't. I think one of the things I wanted to express during the Fifth Estate podcast that I didn't feel like we didn't talk about it in enough detail was how difficult it is to be a whistleblower. Like, you can't be a whistleblower in Soviet Russia.
No.
You'll just be dead.
Right. That's why Legasov's tapes were so important and spread around by the scientists, is because there was no way that would ever reach the press or reach the Western shores. Well, and the scientists, so the only reason that it happened is because they all would copy the tapes and distribute them, and they refused as scientists to allow the continuation.
But also, the reason why his testimony or by these tapes was important and couldn't be ignored was because he killed himself,
right?
And he was already, because of Vienna, he was already an internationally known figure. So why would this internationally known scientist kill himself? And actually, some of these people who were charged with stuff ended up not getting convicted, not because they weren't guilty or whatever, but because, you know, the fall of the Soviet Union.
Well, also because the Russians didn't want to admit that it happened.
So Well,
there was a certain bit of, well, that didn't happen, so we can't charge you with this, even though this is what happened and you were totally guilty of this thing that couldn't have happened.
So, again, I'm going to refer you to the movie The Death of Stalin, because it's played as such a black comedy until you look into the history and realize it's all true.
Is that John Goodman?
John Goodman may be in it, but all it's right. Definitely John Malkovich.
Okay.
Yeah, he plays Khrushchev. So
who plays Rasputin?
No Rasputin, but trust me, it's well worth watching, and it's funny. And you think, oh, this is just absurd humor, and you realize, oh no, this actually happened. We're gonna eventually have a movie about that during about our current presidential administration, I think. Okay. So anyway, we get a high range dosimeter. From General Pikalov, played by Mark Lewis Jones from The Last Jedi. And they're starting to come up with solutions to the problem, because there's two problems. There's still a fire, right? Mm-hmm. And we also have the whole possibility of the meltdown. And this, again, I'm going to have you explain this, Drew. But so the worry was that if the exposed material melts through the concrete platform below where the reactor was built, and gets into the groundwater, then a couple things going to happen, probably explosions, right? Because of steam and whatnot, but also it could contaminate the entire groundwater in the area and spread it, like could poison the Black Sea.
Yes.
So that is a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's not going to go to China, but it would be a bad thing.
Well, it doesn't matter, because once you have a body of water that size, it's irradiated, then it will just, it's just a cascade.
The worst environmental disaster in the history of the world.
Ah, excellent.
Isn't it pretty much still that?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know what Fukushima Daiichi or whatever, because we still don't know exactly, right? I mean, there's a certain amount of secrecy still going on there. Unless I'm just getting my conspiracy theories mixed up, in which case, let me know.
I don't think Dyatlov was at Fukushima, though, so...
No, well, the thing about Fukushima is, again, if you talk to the Cook Inlet keepers, all these dead whales in Anchorage, or, yeah, around the Anchorage area. Who knows? So what we have here, now we have all sorts of things they're going to do, including they're just going to dump sand and boron onto it, right? But turns out that doesn't work, even though we have a helicopter crash that's very spectacular, because they can't even get that material onto the fire, right? Onto the what used to be the core.
Yeah, because they can't fly over it because it will melt.
Yes.
It will melt the helicopter.
So that doesn't work. Then they come up with, they are going to build a tunnel that goes underneath the reactor, and then they're gonna.
Well, that's the secondary concern, because by the boron and glass encapsulating over the top of it and creating this like lava substance, it then increased the temperature because there was a blanket of.
How did they get the fire out? Was that concrete?
They threw the sand and boron.
Okay,
yeah, they kept throwing sand and boron.
It just took a ton more than they thought.
Yeah, because they couldn't dump it directly on top, so they kind of had to fly near and kind of.
Yeah. I hope for a good wind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly what happened.
Kind of like the firefighters do. They kind of hope that they get a dispersal over wherever the fire is, but they're like, meh. Of course, they couldn't get right over it.
Yeah. Well, so, and of course, putting God knows how many pilots at risk.
Well, at this point, they had already evacuated, right?
Yeah. They've evacuated 20 kilometers. Which just was.
I don't think they'd gotten 20 kilometers at that point. I think it was
only, just the one town?
I think it was only the immediate, like the 3 kilometers or five kilometers. It was a very small zone.
Yeah. So,
because they didn't fully evacuate until the press got a hold of it, and then they couldn't not evacuate.
Well, imagine having 1,000 buses show up at your neighborhood and being told you have, 20 minutes to get one bag of clothing, leave your pets, leave all that stuff, you get one bag of clothing, and you get on the bus. And you would just be gone for a couple of days, it'll be fine, but get on the bus now.
They didn't even take the bags, right?
I don't think so. Yeah, and it didn't matter because everybody just said yes. I mean, that's another a good thing about...
Well, the people telling them that they had to do this all had rifles.
True, yeah. Yeah, it was the military, but I mean, they didn't. There was no...
Also, there was probably not going to be much food or product coming into the city anymore.
True.
So,
yeah.
But as a cultural thing, there was no outrage. It was just submission.
Right. This is what we do. Because we were all here for the state anyway. The state built the power plant, and we're here at the generosity of the state. And so the state's telling us we will leave, so we leave.
It's kind of like a religious cult. You just believe what the leader tells you.
Yes.
Okay, so the military suppresses the fire with sand and boron. And then, Pripyat is evacuated. So then Kamyuk gets to Pripyat and warns Legasov and Sherbina that if the molten core reaches the water in the basement, a destructive steam explosion will occur. And Legasov authorizes Gorbachev to...
You mean Gorbachev?
Sorry. Legasov asks Gorbachev to authorize a mission to drain the water so there won't be any water to explode, right?
But really what he's asking for is permission to kill 3 people.
Exactly.
Three citizens.
He needs 3 people.
You need permission because killing is a capital offense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you do so, for the good of the people.
Yeah.
And this was true horror movie stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yep. And they asked for volunteers, and they got volunteers finally. So we have Anenko, Bezpilov, and Baranov, who go down and drain the water.
Yeah, this was fucking the scariest thing I have ever seen in my lifetime, and I can't admit it. And I knew it was fake, and it was like all I could do to watch it.
Yeah, because they were in full scuba gear. But as we're gonna continue to talk about how people like create their own shielding, like make their own lead shielding out of just like scraps of lead, and they hammer it into place because lead is pretty malleable.
One of the running themes in this first couple episodes is just how intense the radiation is and how unexpected the results of such intense radiation are on just normal everyday things. You know, I mean, human bodies for one in the first episode, but the helicopter, you know, just malfunctioning to the point of melting and crashing into the core. And then having radiation so intense that it was affecting anything electrical that was on this crew going down to drain the water. So it was so intense that it was causing their flashlights to malfunction.
Yes.
And just the creepy sound of the dosimeters going crazy. Which is a question, like, why did they even have dosimeters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe to help them know what direction they were heading.
But it was Marco everywhere. Polo, right?
Well, that's if you've ever heard some of the tapes, the 9/11 tapes, you'll hear, because firefighters have a little gadget that if they don't move in like 30 seconds, it starts beeping so they can go recover your pal, your coworker, whatever. And you just hear dozens and dozens of those beeping things. It's like, oh, it's totally chilling. We have a
two
big old dogs outside.
Okay. Sorry.
Those dogs are not going to make it past episode 4.
No, they're not.
the thing that I got, we can discuss it when we start episode 3, because it starts in episode 3. So,
by the way, historically, even though the movie kind of leads you to believe a little bit that these guys are probably going to die right away, they didn't.
They didn't.
They all survived. And two were still alive upon release of this series. But Baranov died of a heart attack in 2005. These guys, though, are actually heroes for sure.
Oh, yeah.
No question.
Yeah, they volunteered, kind of.
Yeah, but
they probably had one of the most dangerous jobs ever.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to talk about another series of jobs that are dangerous, too. But
yeah, they went down to their deaths.
Yeah.
And knowing it with full knowledge. Conditions imaginable.
Yeah. Yeah. You know the movie The Descent? Imagine that without the pretty ladies. Well, okay, and radiation and, yeah, anyway.
And your face melting off.
Yeah, there's that. Okay, so episode 3. Open wide, O Earth. So now we have the basement its pronunciation is not my forte. My fort. The basement is successfully...
Indubitably...
The basement is
successful. They got the water out.
Yeah, they got the water. The basement is drained. Dwayne the tub, I'm drowning. But a nuclear meltdown has begun and threatens to contaminate the groundwater.
Also, so I have a question. So the nuclear radiation, the radiation was wreaking havoc with their electrical equipment. So they had basically magnetos in their flashlights. How would that not be affected? Because it's still electronic components, is it not? You're still using...
That's just kinetic energy, though, right?
I don't know how.
The little squeeze flashlights.
Yeah, I don't know enough.
Yeah,
you guys don't be
doing the hand motions because A, nobody can hear you, and B, it's weird. It's creeping me out a little bit.
So, as I was saying before, I was so rudely interrupted. No, that was just my question. It's a lot of electronic components, even still, though, in a flashlight, even if it's just a magneto, I would think. So, but the noise created by that was equally as tension inducing as anything else, including their Geiger counters, because just their constant panic of having to constantly recharge the device.
You gotta squeeze it so fast, and then you hear the wind down as the light dims. Mm. You gotta squeeze it again real fast.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta use both hands.
Yeah, just squeeze it.
Continue.
I can't. You guys are making these weird milking gestures at me, and it makes me uncomfortable. We're going to get to episode 4 here in a minute. But okay, so
we didn't even mention that we're all in the same room tonight.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we're all at the parents' house.
Yes.
Jason and Jesse are up here to celebrate our heat wave and also Father Anderson's 70th birthday.
And also the fire season.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weather has really made me relate very strongly to the Chernobyl miners.
Yes, exactly.
At least we're allowed to have fans, though.
That's true. Yeah. No, well, I was wearing my Chernobyl miner suit several times this week.
Yes, I was too. Yeah. I was even calling it that.
And then later in the week, I was wearing the egg basket, but that's a whole different deal.
Turns out I'm not a real functioning adult. I don't own a fan.
You don't own a fan at all?
No. I've never needed one before this week. You know what happens when you need one and everybody else needs one too?
There aren't any.
There are not.
You should have told me. We have extra fans.
Yeah. Okay. Your father.
I don't deserve it.
We have so many fans in our house that A, we can't hear one another across the room, and B, I think our house qualifies right now as an air fryer.
I think our father here would have had spare fans had you needed them, because there's probably 30 of them in this house.
Yep, but they're all being used.
He would have parted with one or two.
Well, okay, so since we're tangenting a little bit. So Costco got a shipment of air conditioners in Monday morning.
520 of them.
Yeah, and they were all sold within 30 minutes.
Yes.
And what I found, and they actually had like a system, like Black Friday, where they had a system where you gave people tickets at the front door. They divided people into lines of people who wanted air conditioners and then everybody else. And they said, if you want an air conditioner, sing this line, we'll give you a ticket. You can buy a maximum of two apiece. I think they're like $500 or something. They're not cheap. And they already put them in carts for everybody. It was amazing.
Yeah. So you just had to walk in and grab the cart and head to the checkout.
Yeah. But here's something somebody posted on Facebook that I thought was super educational. So these air conditioning units, they probably are 3 feet tall, something like that. 3.5. The box is probably
they're the portable ones that you duct, that you can put the duct into a window so it vents through a window or vents through a door or whatever.
But they're not the window units that are basically like a microwave shape. Right.
These are on wheels and they're portable and you can put them kind of where you need them.
But you know what you shouldn't do? You shouldn't transport them on their side. And if you do transport them on their side, like to get them into an SUV, you have to put them upright and let them sit for 24 hours. Otherwise, you could burn out the compressor.
Yes.
Oh,
so it's like, oh yeah, you come home from Costco and either you don't read the instructions and then your $500 is wasted, or you do read the instructions and you're just sitting there looking at this box with hate in your eyes if you're me. So yeah, anyway, episode 3, we got miners. So this is where I was headed before. Sorry, I jumped the gun a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we have this plan now to evacuate a tunnel underneath the reactor and fill it full. Basically, they're making a refrigeration unit.
Heat exchanger.
Yeah. They had to get all of the liquid nitrogen.
Yes, they need the liquid nitrogen.
All of it.
Yeah. And they actually, this is actually also verified that the guy in charge of getting it all, who was ordered to get it all, was told, you need to get it all. He's like, I can't get, what do you mean all? No, you get it all or I will put a bullet in your head. Like, okay. Fair enough. Asked and answered.
I misunderstood. Yes. It's clear now. Thanks. Thanks for clearing that up.
By the way, the miners are great because apparently this is also sort of true. Is, you know, so the miners, you know, they may be Russians, so they'll take orders, but
I think they were actually Ukrainian.
Well, either way,
which there is a distinction.
Sure,
and Ukrainians have always been a little independent, which is why, when the minister showed up to get them to go to Chernobyl, they were like, you can kill us all. You don't have enough bullets to kill all of us. But
exactly, yeah. So they're sassy. Sassy miners. We love sassy miners.
But they're realistic about it, too. And they make that great Russian joke about, you know, with the Russian machine.
Yeah. What is the joke is something like, what costs 3 million rubles and
belches smoke and pollution
and cuts an apple into 3 pieces.
Yes, a Russian device that's designed to cut an apple into 4 pieces.
Yeah,
it was hilarious.
Yes, if they were just sorry, I was about to do my one bad joke, ha, 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 but that's a whole different part of the world. Okay, so these Tula coal miners. They're going to evacuate this tunnel under really bad conditions because to excavate this tunnel, they have to be concerned about dust, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's what? Radioactive material. Yes. So they can't breathe this dust.
Also can't blow it around.
Ideally, yeah. So they can't use fans. And the temperatures, and it's in centigrade, so it took me a second. I had to figure it out. But it's like the temperatures are about 130 degrees, which this last week in Anchorage has made me realize even more intently that I could not survive in 130-degree heat.
No. I mean, well, 130 is ridiculous. But say 85 in Alaska is way different than 85 in Missouri.
Well, also being in a tunnel with not a lot of ventilation while you're shoveling dirt in a group of men who are shoveling dirt as well, that would be oppressively oppressive. It is like a magnitude.
But because this is HBO, we have gratuitous nudity. I was a little concerned when they gave us that nudity warning. It's like, oh, I've been burned by this before. You know, you're a teenager and you see that, oh, brief nudity. You're like, oh, I get to see boobs. And it's like some guy's butt. You're like, oh. Or vice versa. I'm not, you know, I'm not yucking anybody's yums. I'm just saying it's usually a bait and switch. Or a not bait and switch.
Anyway, there was lots of tackle in this.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there was
all tackle out.
All the miners are nude and covered in radioactive dust.
Yeah, oh, well. But before that, I did love the conversation between the head miner and Sherbina and Legasov, especially about the mask they wanted him to wear.
Yes.
Yes.
If they worked, you'd be wearing them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we skipped over the really chilling conversation that Legasov had with Sherbina about the effect of radiation. And Sherbina didn't believe him about how bad it was. And he said, you know, if it's so bad, why are we here? And Legasov was like, his response was something like, well, we shouldn't be. You and I will both be dead in 5 years, so there's that.
Yes, yes. Although one of them was not caused directly by nuclear material. Whatever.
Did you just say nuclear?
I did. I struggle with that. I don't want to.
Okay.
It's a cross I bear, whatever. It's not ideal. I'm in recovery.
Okay, it's fine.
My Al-Anon people tell me that it's just a process that you have to take steps. Thank you for laughing the other week at the Al-Anon joke. It made me so happy. Okay,
that was actually pretty savage.
So,
the story was also very fun. The story where beep,
oh yeah,
beep,
oh,
and then
yeah,
we beep, and then that beep. That was great.
It was like I texted you guys saying nothing makes me happier than to salvage a story with just a couple beeps. And again, I don't know if it's going to make any sense to anybody else, but it makes sense.
I haven't listened to it yet.
Oh,
but
it's fun. We salvage a whole story and keep everybody's
anonymity.
Yeah, for the most part, not completely anonymous. They'll know who they are.
You did not beep the first.
You're kidding.
No.
Fun. Okay, well,
that makes me the bad guy, I'm pretty sure. I've always been
no. It turns out it turns out you're fine. No, really, it's a great story and you're the hero of it. You're not in any way the villain.
The hero of it.
Well, you listen to it.
Yeah, take a listen.
All right, now I'm gonna have to listen.
Yeah. Okay, so
I call you asshole.
So we have Kamya goes to a Moscow hospital where she finds Dyatlov uncooperative, but learns from Tuptonov and Akimov, who are the two guys in the
control
room. Like in the control room that are kind of like, you're sympathetic toward those guys.
They were the ones who kept saying,
we did everything right.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just following orders and they're trying to suggest maybe in a roundabout way that, oh yeah, this thing that all the monitors are telling us has happened and everything that you're saying didn't happen, probably did happen. It's probably keep that on in a note. In I don't know about you, but in America, I think there'd be people already like doing emails with carbon copies to everybody up the chain of command saying, this is a bad idea. So we have Ludmila, who has bribed her way into the hospital to visit Vasily. Who Vasily is dying from radiation sickness.
But not seemingly initially. When you see him at first, you're like, oh, he's fine.
Yeah.
And then it degenerates in an order that was gruesome.
You know, she's in a movie coming out, that actress.
Emily Watson?
No. Jesse Buckley.
Yeah. What's she in?
Wild Rose.
Never heard of it.
It's a movie about a ex-convict Scottish country singer who wants to move to Nashville.
What? You're kidding.
No.
Oh, excellent.
It looks great.
I think she is a singer.
Yeah. No, I'm not joking. It looks really good.
Okay. All right. When we find, when Kamyak realizes that Ludmila is pregnant, she flips her chicken and she threatens to expose this whole thing, which gets her swiftly arrested by KGB agents and imprisoned.
They're everywhere.
Exactly. And she's in prison, but Legasov arranges her release. I can only imagine that her being I can't think of the word, a composite character. Somebody probably went to jail and another person replaced them in the storytelling.
Wow. Sorry. She's unrecognizable.
Oh, yeah. She's a cutie.
It's amazing. They did a great job because she looks just like, almost just like the real Ludmila.
Well, and she's, yeah, they did a good job with that. And they also, she had the unfortunate 80s hair, even in the Ukraine, couldn't escape that 80s perm.
I did not oversell that movie, right?
Well, I haven't. I don't know anything about the movie. Oh dear,
it's a real thing. Check it out.
Yeah, it was released in 2018. So, a musician from Glasgow dreams of becoming a Nashville star. That's the synopsis.
So then we see the scene of the mass burial of the patients from the Moscow hospital. That's all real, of course. Sherbina and Legasov report to the Central Executive Committee, and they have a plan for decontamination, and that they require the mass mobilization of liquidators, which apparently the Russian translation of liquidator is not quite as scary as the English translation. Like, liquidator is really a scary sounding word, but apparently in Russian it translates a little softer. But still, they mobilized hundreds of thousands of people.
I think 750,000 people, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Again, something that we could not do. There's no way we would do it. If something happened like this in America, we'd probably just draw a big line around that area and just say, don't go past this anymore. We're going to leave it be.
Love Canal.
And then eventually we'll get us some sort of super fund. Although not the current political climate would not probably respond that way, but we'll see. Who knows? We don't want to have that.
There wouldn't be a problem. It's fine.
Exactly. Well, you know, it would create jobs, though. 750,000 jobs, you know what kind of numbers that would give us? Unemployment would be like negative 20%. Hard to do, statistically. Okay. Episode 4. The happiness of all mankind.
Well, which doesn't... So Vasily dies in episode 3.
Yes. And is buried.
Yeah.
And we see the funeral. It's very sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
Because you get that slow encapsulation of the cement, the concrete over the coffin, the lead coffins. Yes.
Imagine.
They also show some really gruesome.
Yes.
Dying.
Well, they show two really gruesome guys, Akimov. The guys we met. But then we don't see the third guy. That Emily Watson looks at and is just so horrified, and you have to imagine what that person, if they showed these guys, what did that person look like?
Yeah, she describes it later as he had no face.
Yeah, so that's a little scary.
Yeah, I was actually impressed that Dab survived that without too much difficulty, because it was gruesome.
It was gruesome, yes. They actually had lots of conversations about, like, they scaled back some of the stuff because at a certain point you didn't want to be like reveling in the GRU or whatever. So, episode 4,
Quattro,
the happiness of all mankind. Shikiri. So, residents It's reading. Reading is fundamental. If you learn to read and speak,
at least you're consistent.
Also, sharing is caring.
The solution to pollution, I've learned recently, is almost never dilution.
That is accurate.
Okay. Also, remember Charlie.
Remember Charlie.
Okay. Which I think they had that quote in Apocalypse Now, but it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, that was something very different.
Yes. Okay. Residents are evacuated from the wider Chernobyl exclusion zone and Jesus Christ. And and scrubbing operations are underway.
Well, the recovery plan is bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, they are going to raise the forest in like a 2,600 kilometer area. They're going to till the dirt to essentially turn over like a 2 or 3 foot layer to get all the radioactive topsoil underneath. They're going to kill all the wildlife. And then they have to figure out how to actually put some containment around the core.
Yes. This is where we meet Pavel, played by Barry Keoghan, who is actually George from Dunkirk.
He is.
Yeah, poor George.
Yeah, he looks super familiar.
Yeah, and he is paired with a Soviet-Afghan war veteran, Bacho, played by Fariz Fariz from Zero Dark Thirty. And so, Drew, and maybe Jesse, have you seen The Last House on the Left, the 1972 horror movie, I think?
No, I haven't.
Yes. Yeah. Did Bacho remind you all that big bad guy Krug? Like, he has a Krug face.
He did not.
Okay.
But I haven't seen Last House on the Left in a long time. Ever since we recorded that little snippet for the wrong podcast.
Yeah. Well, no. We actually recorded that snippet and never sent it to the right podcast.
Oh.
It was the other one that we sent to the wrong podcast. Yeah. We've never contributed to the United Nations of Horror, even though we want to. But, oh well. So,
I think our friend Jesse is putting Last House on the Left on the list now.
Last House on the Left is if you're a horror fan, it's like probably mandatory viewing, but it's not pleasant.
I would say it's not even good.
No, it's not. It's
like Wes Craven's first movie.
I think so. Yeah,
it's not good.
No. It's definitely nothing like his later movies for sure, and it will make you feel bad watching it. I mean, it's just gritty and grimy and gross. So Pavel, poor George from Dunkirk, he is basically drafted. And
now were they just drafted, like they were just drafted, or were these like miscreants and labor camp people?
I think it was,
he seemed like a pretty decent dude.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, like they don't have unemployment problems in Soviet Russia.
They don't have unemployment in Russia.
Exactly. Everybody's employed.
That's right.
Yeah.
You work for the state in one way or another.
And they will do make work for you. Until you can get your way through hook or crook, mostly crook, I think, into a management job, which is all Dyatlov wanted. He just wanted a management job. He completes his test. He checks off his checklist. He's like, see, I'm a good operator. Promote me to upper level management. We've already got one of the other guy is already going to go. He's already planning his. They've already got it all worked out how they're each going to get promoted. So turns out chickens hatching, counting, it's a bad deal. So
chicken Kiev.
Cronyism.
Yes. So
always a bad deal.
Their job is to shoot and dispose of abandoned animals. Which is kind of a touchy subject, you know, for especially, you know, in these modern days of PETA and whatnot.
I actually left the room the first time. I couldn't. There's like, I couldn't.
Yeah, because you think of, you have to kill wildlife, which is sad.
Yeah.
But what they're actually doing is they're killing all the abandoned pets.
Yes. Yes. And that will come to you when you call because they're domesticated. They want to be fed and loved and taken care of and just give you a little panty hug. No, not panties. No, sorry.
Phrasing.
So, Jesse, were you okay with... I mean, actually, I'm not setting you up for...
Yeah,
never mind.
That, again, phrasing.
Yeah, well, I can't condone the murder of pets, but I could see, you know, how it needed to be done.
How did you handle watching? I think that was Eric's question.
I don't think I had as hard of a time as you did with it.
Okay. But back at the reactor, we got this other problem. Highly, highly, highly radioactive debris on the roof. And before they put some kind of sarcophagus, or somehow, I mean, that's the idea was a sarcophagus. They build a sarcophagus, just put a bunch of cement or whatever on top of this thing, right? To build a shield around it. But they can't do it until they take all the pieces off the roof. And the easiest way to do is just shove those pieces literally off of the roof into the reactor and then bury the whole thing.
They had to get the radiation levels down to a safe enough level where they could actually have people working.
Yeah, because the areas of the roof were very radioactive. I think
they said like 2, 5, and 10,000 Rankins.
Yeah, it was yeah. It was bad.
So is all the pieces of the graphite core.
Yeah. So they need to take this down. So what better way than, hey, we're going to use like lunar lander robots.
So I have a question, and Drew, you may not know the answer to this. So at the when the meltdown and explosion happened, or explosion and then subsequent meltdown, at the explosion, it was just the graphite that got expunged, and all the uranium and whatnot was still in rod form. It hadn't melted down yet.
You can see it, maybe in episode 5. It was, I mean, still mostly in rod form, but the rods are all bent and broken.
Okay, I saw yeah, that. I just
is that the elephant foot?
The elephant foot was the magma, the stuff that was created, the glass boron melting.
So they get some robots, and turns out the rovers, which I mean, literally, they're gonna like do the most like Atari 2600 thing with these robots and just. Shove stuff off the side and well, the problem is things are so radioactive that they fried all the electronics on the robots.
And these were their moon landers.
Yes. So,
which was a nice repurposing.
Well, and then the West Germans were like, hey, we got a robot. It'll survive what you're, the 230 whatever you reported. Well, we got a robot that'll work just fine for that.
Well, the party reported we need a robot, and the West Germans were like, "How? You know, what's your Rankin reading in this? It needs to last to 2000."
And so they sent over what was the name of the robot?
The Joker.
The Joker, yes. And so they get, and the great thing is that. So the landers were all CG, by the way, but the Joker, they actually had to build because they had to have a scene where they transported the truck. So they make a big deal about the arrival of the Joker and everything. And they get the Joker up there. And of course, the Joker fries immediately because they had underreported the radiation by so much, which again, it's all the lies that's causing the problem here.
And Sherbina has an amazing freak out about it.
Yes. Yeah. He has the biggest tantrum ever, and a phone dies a sad death.
It was amazingly awesome. Oh, it was awesome, great. Though,
yeah.
Because it was so satisfying. Like, if you've ever had difficulties with somebody over the phone like that, that's like my dream to be able to do that. Nowadays, you don't have phones like that.
That's just GE. Yeah, that's just Father Anderson.
Well, and the boss move was he gave the phone to somebody after he was done.
Yes.
We need a new phone.
Go take care of it.
So now they have another solution. Not the best solution, but a solution that General Nikolai Tarakanov, who is played by Ralph Innocent from Guardians of the Galaxy, he says, well, we need human robots. Now, how chilling is that? Yeah. We are going to take 3,828 liquidators, and they're going to go up and clear this by hand. Each of them get 90 seconds, and at the end of those 90 seconds, they are done. They can no longer work in Chernobyl, and they're sent back home, heroes.
Yeah, they receive a lifetime dose in 90 seconds.
Yes.
That's terrifying.
And then we get to see, I mean, the fact that they did like the POV shot and everything of them, like the guy doing his 90 seconds that actually lasts 90 seconds in the show is fantastic. Brilliant piece of storytelling right there.
Yeah. The guy who cuts his boot open.
Yes. And they're like, basically, they go up there with a shovel and they have to run in and try to pick up a really heavy rock, basically, and toss it over the edge and then run back.
Without looking over the edge.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't trip.
Because it will melt your face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so anyway. So they did this.
Yes.
They took 3,800 humans and gave them their lifetime level of radiation in a minute and a half. So it's bad, bad mojo, people. It's
yeah, what they actually accomplished to respond to the Chernobyl disaster is mind-boggling.
Yeah, again, that would never happen here because OSHA would shit their pants.
Oh, yeah. No, basically, this is like something that communist countries would do well.
Oh, yes.
North Korea wouldn't have any problem. Just throw people at it until it's just make a human sarcophagus.
We just throw people in it, right?
Yeah.
Don't have to feed them.
We don't have almost a million people just laying around waiting to go be shipped off to do God knows what and ask little questions. So, back in Moscow, we have Kamyuk investigating the Moscow archives and talks to Dyatlov in the hospital. And Dyatlov is still a pain in the ass guy. He's like, why are you even asking me questions? I have no interest in talking to you because there's nobody, the government has no interest in the truth. So anything I tell you, it's not going to benefit me at all.
She tries to make the point that, well, maybe finding the truth will save you from the bullet. He's like, nothing's saving me from the bullet.
Exactly. Yeah. He already knows he is the person who's going to be blamed for this.
And he looks terrible, by the way.
Yes.
He's unrecognizable at one point, but then he slowly reverts to his smarmy self.
Yeah. Back to Sherbina and Legasov. They talk to Kamyuk and they meet away from the KGB listening ears.
Like in an old schoolhouse.
Yeah, and they all talk about how they have to testify as experts in the trial of Dyatlov, Brukhanov, and Fomin.
Well, before that, Legasov has to go to Vienna.
He has to go to Vienna for the International Atomic Energy Agency.
And she's all uppity that no matter what, he has to tell the truth. This is the opportunity.
Exactly.
He must.
Yes.
And he's like, not gonna happen. Like, you're not the one who has to go, and like, not gonna happen.
Well, also, she finds that she actually uncovered an article written about a problem with the Leningrad nuclear power plant in 1975.
Yeah, that great library scene with the bureaucrat where she tries to check out like 20 different articles and he crosses them all out, but you can have this one.
Exactly. So it turns out who wrote the article?
Legasov.
So he knew about the
deficiency.
Yeah.
Positive void coefficient.
But again, he could not have predicted that all of these other factors would be in play at the same time. And so Kamyuk tells Legasov to tell the IAEA the whole thing. And Sherbina is like, that's not a good idea, dude. Plus, you're on foreign soil. In a high-profile position, you're not going to take the anti-government view. So, now we're off to episode 5. We've all made it into 5. It's almost 2 hours into this.
They spent way too much time and footage on the animal killings, though.
There was a scene they shot that they didn't use.
Thank God.
Do you want me to describe that scene for you?
Oh, sure.
There was a scene that when they were loading the dead animals into the mass grave that they were going to cover with cement.
There's one still alive.
Yes.
Of course.
And they didn't have any bullets left. So someone had to go in there with a knife. Yeah. And they were like, no, we're not going to do this. We're not. It's too much.
As if killing the puppies wasn't spoilers. As if killing the puppies wasn't bad enough.
Oh, no. Yeah. But killing the puppies tells you, it gives you that whole the Mist kind of horror. But yeah, it just would have been gratuitous to do it anymore. So. Although there's also that scene where we have the soldier who tries to tell the old babushka lady to evacuate. She's like, nope. She's out milking her cow.
Yeah.
And he's like, lady, you need to leave, you know, because the other thing is, on one hand, he's just given order, you know, he just has orders. On the other hand, he needs to respect his elders, right? And she's 80 something years old. She's not going to leave her home.
Well, and she's, you know, her education, her level of education is suspect because she's, you're telling me I should leave and be afraid of something I can't even see.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so he tries to persuade her by she's milking this cow. So he takes the pail of milk and tosses it. And then he takes out his gun. And we think he's going to kill the old lady, or at least I thought he was going to kill the old lady.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was coming.
Yeah. So I thought it was a fun piece of business where he just kills the cow. She gets on the bus. You know, it's the comic relief, really.
Did she get on the bus, though?
I think it's implied that she got in the bus. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he could have easily walked away and said, no, I killed her. Sorry. She's dead in the farmhouse.
Nah, he wasn't going to do that.
Oh.
It was like 12 years old.
That would be like the beginning to What the Hills Have Eyes.
Yes. Or Drag Me to Hell. Which, by the way, have you seen Drag Me to Hell? Oh. Well, okay. Never mind. You need to see Drag Me to Hell and we'll have a whole conversation.
It's a Sam Raimi movie, right?
It is. Yeah. The first time I saw it, I wasn't real impressed with it because I thought it was too jokey. And then I watched it another time realizing that, oh, okay, jokey could be fun. And it turns out it was a lot of fun. But I have one fundamental problem with that movie, but we'll talk about it later. Around Halloween, Drag Me to Hell. So, okay. So, episode 5. Jason, can you say the name of the episode?
Oh, what is it?
Vichnaya Pamyat?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Good job, Jason.
I believe it's called Vichnaya Pamyat, which actually means eternal memory, which is actually a song or a poem or something. Okay, so following Legasov's testimony to the IAEA in Vienna, in which he lies, Dyatlov,
Brukhanov.
Yes, that guy. And Fomin are put on trial in the abandoned city of Chernobyl. And this is all a show trial. I mean, this is just for show 100%. And by the way, this is the episode where there's a lot of liberties taken with the truth because Legasov never testified during this trial and this was all just a pure show trial. But the point of doing this.
This is a lot of master exposition.
This is all exposition and it allows you to kind of understand that even though. Like, I thought another thing brilliant about this show is that for 4 episodes, you're thinking that Dyatlov is just the worst guy. He's like the super villain. But turns out he's just an unlucky guy who happens to be an asshole.
Yeah.
So,
his arrogance is compounded by the flaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably wasn't responsible for the accident, but his reaction to it killed many, many people.
Well, and that's why in the suicide note or whatever, didn't he say that, or maybe it was in the transcripts or of his.
It was in the recording.
But he's like that Dyatlov didn't deserve to go to prison. He deserved to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the dramatic tension in this trial is that most of the active recovery at Chernobyl is almost complete. And Chernobyl and Legasov did manage just an unbelievable effort. And if the state can have some scapegoats, then they will be hailed as heroes, like all-time heroes of the Soviet Union. So he actually has a significant skin in the game here at this trial.
But we also find out that true to the earlier prediction, Sherbina he's already coughing up blood onto his hanky. So he's like, oh, yeah.
And Legasov is losing hair.
Yeah. So they're going to die. I mean, they've been irradiated this whole time. They're going to die. So, hey, why not? So the whole idea is that Legasov will testify not for the jurors, but for
the report.
The other scientists in the room can hear what really happened. So he does this really dramatic thing and he tells the whole story, which I think is brilliantly done.
I think it was a good visual, even though I couldn't read any of the Russian.
It's perfect though. I love
Yeah, just the hot cold.
Yes,
great.
But the visualization of the tiles and then the numbers of them and then like these are all gone. And so now in the slingshot analogy, like you have pulled the slingshot all the way back and now you're going to let go.
Like the game show Flinch on Netflix.
That you shouldn't bother watching because it's awful.
I don't know. It's a good 22 minutes per episode.
I would say the 3 out of 4 of us would overrule you.
Well.
But I don't want to put words in Drew or boyfriend Jesse's mouth. So
have you seen Flinch?
Yeah, I didn't care for it.
Okay. It's all right. You have your opinion, as wrong as it is.
Drew, did you watch it at all?
No, I will not be watching it.
I think I'm the only one that enjoyed it, including probably the executives at Netflix who were like, well, it doesn't cost anything more than we've already paid for it. We'll just make it streaming. But let me tell you, it's a diversion from my life where a lot of times on the TV that's mostly on just for the dogs is like my 600-pound 90-day wedding tumor.
I love that show.
I don't think I've ever seen more judge shows than when I'm here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this house is a house of judge shows. Well, be glad that it's not all Dr. Pimple Popper or 90 Day Fiancé.
I have, to this date, I have never seen any of those little horrible extrusion videos.
So. No, it's not just videos. It's a TV show.
I know it is, yeah. But I have never.
It's the worst.
Never have I ever.
Yeah. True.
It's the worst, but yet you've watched it.
I've seen them all.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Yeah. I've been stuck in a pimple popper hole. Like, it doesn't do it for me. I understand a lot of people really enjoy it, like the ASMR stuff.
My children love it.
They
love it.
It's just
gross. Is that why you've watched it?
Yeah. Okay. That's not, yeah. Okay. not my choice of shows to watch.
Well, I don't know. Eric likes Flinch, so I'm not going to judge too much.
No, I'm just saying. If it's on, it's in.
Yeah, they graduated to Dr. Pimple Popper from a couple different vet shows, which I found to be equally as horrible.
Yeah, no, the vet shows are... Yeah, that's when you learn that being a veterinarian isn't about helping animals. It's about putting them to death. Yeah.
That's why I would have loved to become a vet until I found out that majority of your schooling is learning how to kill animals.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's like it has lots of other attractive features, but it's just that one that's going to take most of your day.
To yank a cow out of another cow using like a chain and a jack.
Or to emasculate an animal using like a rubber band.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. that's just farming 101.
Still.
The Elastrator.
One of those H's in the 4 H's heaves.
One of my coworkers got little baby goats and she was talking about that and
all together. Baby goat doo 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 doo, doo baby.
Can't condone that.
You guys are no fun, man. So okay, baby goats.
Anyway, she was talking.
I was just kidding.
She was talking to her husband, and she said, "You're gonna have to have somebody come over and do that because I cannot touch those parts, and I'm not gonna hold them while you touch the parts, and I'm not going to like no, that rubber band is not for me." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "We have to, you know, the goats and stuff," and I was like, oh, no. Yeah. Good on you. Goodbye. So, it's just traumatic for everybody involved. Poor goats. But then she said she didn't want them, you know, having sex with each other since they were related. So, I don't really think it matters as much with livestock. So,
another fun thing I learned from vet shows. Mm-hmm. Horses can get gunk up in their foreskin that, like, will calcify and turn into rocks. And then they get very grumpy about it. So part of the vet's duties is to go in there, grab all those rocks.
So it's like smegma rocks.
Yeah.
That's a phrase I never thought I would.
So smegma tights come from the ceiling and smegma mites come from the floor?
I think it's the other way, but yeah.
Anyway.
Wow.
So back to Chernobyl real quick.
It's a leap.
Yeah, so at the end, we have this, again, this great trial, whatever, and basically at the end of it, the KGB detains him and says, you're not going to go to jail or anything.
We can't put you in jail because of your fame.
Yeah. And in fact, you're not going to even lose your job. Your just job is not going to consist of doing anything anymore.
Or talking to anybody ever.
And you will get no credit for being the hero of the state or whatever. And then they show all these pictures of the real life Legasov and other players. And it's actually quite a long end credit scene where they tell you like what happened afterward.
Yeah. And the official death toll from Chernobyl.
31.
Yeah. Jared Harris should win all of the awards.
Yes.
He might be a better actor than his father.
Who's his father?
Richard Harris.
Oh.
Richard Harris from My Name is Horse?
From Unforgiven.
Ah. It's not My Name is Horse. The Man Called Horse. Is it Richard Chamberlain or Richard Harris?
Sometimes horses get really grumpy. Because...
I'm so glad we could be an educational podcast as well.
Yeah.
Anyway. Things I never knew.
Did Richard Harris do MacArthur Park? Am I thinking of somebody else?
I don't know.
He left the cake out in the rain? Who am I thinking of? Anybody?
Hold on. Donna Summer lyrics by...
I'll never have that recipe again.
He was a man called Horse.
Okay. And this is Legasov's dad?
It was Richard Harris.
Oh, okay. He was also MacArthur Park.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Okay, I can't speak English, but I remember that one piece of trivia. So, yeah. So, I guess to a regular format. So, Brother Jay, any other notes, thoughts?
Well,
is it okay to spoil Mad Men here?
It is. Sure. I'm nervous. Yeah,
it's poor Jared Harris. It's the second time his character died that way.
Ah, did he commit suicide in Mad Men? Mm-hmm. I don't remember that.
Yeah, in his office.
Oh.
Ah. Is it because of the littering in the park?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly what
he did. He'd never have that recipe again. So, atypical for an episode, I actually have no notes.
Sweet.
So
which means what would your verdict be? Render your judgment.
This is an A+. I mean, absolutely. It doesn't get much better than this. It's atypical. Again, using that word twice. It's not the normal podcast for us because it's 5 episodes, so it's pretty long.
Yeah. But this will be a long episode.
It's well worth it.
Oh, I agree.
I've seen it twice plus. Boyfriend Jesse's seen it twice. It's actually worth rewatching, although I wouldn't recommend rewatching it in as rapid succession as maybe we did. I'd like to come back to it again in a while, maybe, and just watch some of the episodes. I can't watch all of
them. If we take episode 4, can we just put in that Sarah McLachlan song?
But if you haven't seen it, seek it out and watch it. If it ever becomes available on a set, like a DVD set, I will absolutely be buying it. So,
excellent. So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Absolutely. I think you should watch it twice. For real.
Boyfriend Jesse, what's your verdict?
Yeah, it was dark, kind of hard to watch it sometimes, but yeah, definitely learned a lot from it, actually.
Did it give you a lot of curiosity about finding out more?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Did it make you want to watch the Chernobyl Diaries horror movie?
I actually have seen that.
Okay.
Of course.
Not quite as scientifically accurate, but...
More bears.
Yeah.
This may be one of the best things HBO has ever made.
Quite possibly. Certainly that I've seen.
That includes The Sopranos, right?
Did you like The Sopranos?
I love The Sopranos.
Oh, except for that last episode.
I never saw it, so...
I love the ending of The Sopranos.
Really?
Don't stop believing, man.
Oh, well. God.